See you again on Monday morning.
This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. U.S. President Joe Biden has concluded a U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington. He posed with African leaders for a family photo to conclude the summit on Thursday. Earlier in the day, Biden announced he would support the African Union joining the G20 group of large economies as a permanent member. VOA's Diane Roberts has more.
Mr. Biden said, quote, "Africa belongs to the table in every room for global challenges that are being discussed, and in every institution," end quote. He said he was planning a visit, the first by a U.S. president since 2015, to sub-Saharan Africa. And he told African Leadership Administration officials from Vice President Kamala Harris to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin will visit Africa too.
Promise you'll send them back. Promise you'll send them back. I need them. They all want to go, but I'm worried they won't come home. Yeah, but I'm all kidding aside, we're all going to be seeing you, and you're going to see a lot of us because we're deadly earnest and serious about this endeavor.
Diane Roberts, VOA News, Washington.
EU and U.S. envoys this week called on Kosovo and Serbia to remain calm amid an ongoing ethnic crisis in the north of Kosovo, where local Serbs have erected barricades to prevent police movement, part of tensions between authorities and Kosovo's Serb minority. Kosovo President Vjosa Osmani told Parliament, "The north of Kosovo continues to be a challenge due to the territorial claims that Serbia has on Kosovo, which it expresses through the financing and support of its illegal criminal structures." Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić joined his government's meeting later on Thursday to discuss Kosovo's application to join the European Union. VOA News. North Korean state media said Friday that leader Kim Jong-un has presided over the successful test of a high-thrust solid propellant engine to be used in a new weapon. Pictures from the Korean Central News Agency showed Kim holding a cigarette and smiling as white smoke emerged from a horizontal test engine stand at a launch site in western North Korea. Analysts believe the test is likely related to North Korea's pursuit of a solid-fueled intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM. North Korea already possesses and has flight-tested multiple liquid-fueled ICBMs that can likely reach the United States. Americans sharply cut back on retail shopping as the holiday season began last month. AP correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
The government says retail sales fell 0.6% from November to December after a sharper rise the previous month. This time, they were down at stores selling everything from furniture and electronics to auto dealers. Consumer spending has been resilient since inflation first spiked a year and a half ago, but the capacity of many Americans to keep spending may be starting to wane with prices and interest rates rising. Those who are spending are using their credit cards more. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York says total credit card debt jumped 15% in the third quarter, the biggest rise in two decades. Sagar Magani, Washington.
German tennis legend Boris Becker has returned to Germany after serving an eight-month sentence in a British prison. AP correspondent Karen Chamas.
Becker, who has lived in the UK since 2012, travelled immediately back to Germany after being released. The three-time Wimbledon champion had been sentenced to 30 months in prison in April for illicitly transferring large amounts of money and hiding assets after he was declared bankrupt. Becker's lawyer said the tennis star has served his sentence and is no longer subject to penal restrictions in Germany. Karen Chamas, London.
A Nigerian Islamic Sharia court has sentenced a prominent Sufi Muslim cleric to death for blasphemy against the Prophet Muhammad in a rare capital punishment ruling against an imam. The upper Sharia court passed the sentence on Sheikh Abdul Jabbar Nasiru Kabara for his revisionist preaching, which the court said misinterpreted some religious text that portrayed the prophet in a bad light. Blasphemy is a sensitive issue that can lead to a death sentence in a dozen predominantly Muslim states in northern Nigeria, but those death sentences are rarely carried out. A judge has handed down the longest prison term so far in the plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Three defendants were each sentenced with multiple years for providing material support for a terrorist act. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today's Friday, December 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit wraps up with President Joe Biden expressing optimism about the continent's future.
Africa's economic transition depends on good government, healthy populations, and reliable and affordable energy. These things business seeks out when they're looking to invest.
Ukraine stages heaviest shelling in years in the country's Russia-controlled east.
The Russian-backed mayor of Donetsk City said 40 Ukrainian rockets were fired from Grad multiple rocket launchers in the early hours. An apartment block was damaged.
And South Africa president fights for his political future as the ruling party meets Friday. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. President Joe Biden on Thursday announced he will support the African Union joining the G20 group of large economies as a permanent member. The move is part of Washington's efforts to reinvigorate ties with the region that has taken a back seat to other priorities in recent years. Biden also enumerated billions of dollars worth of U.S. investments in Africa, both public and private, in remarks to African leaders and the continent's business community at a three-day summit. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports.
President Joe Biden says he's serious about Africa's success and has a serious plan to get the continent on better footing.
Africa's economic transition depends on good government, healthy populations, and reliable and affordable energy. These things business seeks out when they're looking to invest. They attract new opportunities and they launch new partnerships. And the United States is committed to supporting every aspect of Africa's inclusive growth and creating the best possible environment for sustained commercial engagement between Africa companies and American companies. The United States is all in on Africa's future.
The second day of the three-day U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit focused on the one thing the U.S. has and that every African country needs: money. U.S. officials announced that they would give African nations $55 billion over the next 3 years, much of it directed toward health and climate projects. On Tuesday, Biden also announced an agreement between the U.S. and the new African Continental Free Trade Area, and a range of other bilateral agreements that he said would unlock economic growth in the world's fastest-growing continent. And he said the U.S. is taking this relationship online by working with Congress to invest about $350 million in what he called the digital transformation with Africa.
And this will include partnerships between African-American companies to provide cybersecurity services to make sure Africa's digital environment is reliable and secure.
The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations told VOA that U.S. assistance won't be affected by African nations' reluctance to condemn Russia and cut ties over its invasion of Ukraine.
We're not paying countries to vote for condemning Russia, and we're not threatening countries who decide not to vote. But we are appealing to them. We're appealing to their values. We're appealing to right versus wrong.
And the new prime minister of Lesotho, also the richest man in the tiny southern African nation, told VOA's Peter Claudi that African leaders also want to see a 10-year extension of the African Growth and Opportunities Act, which confers duty-free status on some African exports.
We have just negotiated this morning with the senators that we need to extend AGOA by 10 years because it's coming to an end in 2025. So we have already started negotiations in that part. AGOA is very, very, very important to us as a country.
The last summit that brought dozens of African leaders to Washington was 8 years ago. But administration officials say their commitment to the mother continent is as strong today as it ever was. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
And as the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit wraps up in Washington, many are wondering if the three-day affair will be viewed as a success. Thomas Chihi, a distinguished fellow at the U.S. Institute for Peace Africa Center, thinks it will be, particularly with trade deals. Sheehy tells VOA's Carol Van Dam there's a growing interest by the U.S. in strategic minerals that are very important to Africa's energy transition. He notes that over the last few months, there's been major deals announced to assist mining companies in processing critical minerals.
There's a lot of irresponsible mining in Africa by China and other countries. And so it's very important that the mining be done in a way that is economically helpful, that doesn't abides by labor and environmental rights. And so I'm pretty confident that coming out of the summit, there's going to be more deals, more support for mining companies to help the U.S. transition, but again, do so in a responsible way.
And when you say in a responsible way, as opposed to China, be more specific. What is China doing?
The mining sector, been many instances of abuses, reported abuses of child labor. That's well documented that in Eastern Congo, for example, they're using children to mine cobalt. It's very unhealthy. They're obviously not using the correct equipment, the correct safety procedures. Children shouldn't be mining, period. So that's an example. And you see that, unfortunately, in many parts of Africa. The other thing is just transparency in the deals.
Yeah, as you know, corruption is a big problem in many African countries. And how would it be structured so that you can try to weed that out before the deals even get going?
Well, obviously, U.S. mining operations operate under very stringent regulations and laws in terms of overseas operations, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. So they have very high standards, and they have to be transparent and have to, and certainly can't engage in corruption unless they run the risk of prosecution. And those are very serious penalties. So I think part of the summit is the idea to entice more U.S. companies to look at Africa and get involved in the mining sector. And I think with that, bring the higher standards. The other thing I would add, Carol, is that it's very important to get African civil society involved. And they can be a real pressure point for transparency. And so, for example, you've seen many Chinese infrastructure deals, the major $5 billion project in Kenya, the railway project. Well, civil society is agitated, and those terms have been revealed.
The summit is viewed as the U.S. government's push or effort to reassert its influence in Africa as a counterweight to China's involvement. Is it looking like this summit was a pretty big success as far as that goes?
I've been attending many events. I think people are very excited that it's back. As you know, it's been since 2014, since there's a summit. I think we're not going to go another 8 years without a summit. I'm pretty confident there'll be a commitment to follow up. But with these summits, it's like anything. You really need to make sure some of the promises and deals are followed through on.
That's Thomas Hihi, a distinguished fellow at the Africa Center of the U.S. Institute for Peace in Washington. He was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam. Moscow installed officials say Ukrainian forces staged their heaviest shelling in years in the country's Russia-controlled east on Thursday. This as both sides ruled out a Christmas truce in the nearly 10-month-old war. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
The attacks came as both sides ruled out a Christmas truce in a war that's been raging for almost 10 months. The Russian-backed mayor of Donetsk City said 40 Ukrainian rockets were fired from Grad multiple rocket launchers in the early hours. An apartment block was damaged and a hospital where Marina works.
There was a woman lying here. Just imagine all that debris flying her way. You can see some blood here. She was taken into surgery. They sewed up and bandaged the wound on her leg.
Local resident Ludmila Butsenko sustained a head injury.
I heard a loud rumble. And I saw something like a big fireball falling right in front of the balcony. It all started coming in onto my bed. Glass, bits of bricks, all of it.
Meanwhile, Russian forces kept up shelling and airstrikes along the entire eastern front line. Fighting continues to rage largely in Ukraine's east and south, with little movement on either side. Ukrainian Army Brigadier General Alexei Gromov said Russia was digging in for a long war and still wanted to conquer the whole country.
The Kremlin realizes that in the short-term perspective, it is impossible to achieve victory in the war, thus seeking to turn the conflict into a prolonged armed confrontation aimed at exhaustion of Ukraine and our partners.
Moscow and Kiev are not currently holding talks to end Europe's biggest conflict since World War II. On Wednesday, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said a Christmas ceasefire was not on the agenda, the same day that Kiev suffered its first major drone attack in weeks. Two administrative buildings were hit, but air defenses largely repelled the attack. Russia denies deliberately attacking civilians, while Ukraine says Russian strikes constitute a war crime.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters. And the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights Thursday accused Russian forces of gross violations of international human rights and humanitarian laws in Ukraine. The accusation was made in a report on recent developments in Russia's war on Ukraine and was submitted to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The report focuses on killings of civilians by Russian armed forces through summary executions, which took place in 102 villages and towns between February 24th and April 6th. UN monitors have documented the killings of 441 civilians, men, women, boys, and girls, by Russian troops. UN Rights Chief Volker Türk says the actual figures are likely to be much higher.
In some cases, Russian soldiers executed civilians in makeshift places of detention, even where the victim had shown clearly that they were not a threat, for example, by holding their hands in the air. There are therefore strong indications that the summary executions documented in the report may constitute the war crime of willful killing.
The report also documents Russian attacks on residential buildings and missile strikes on critical infrastructure, including energy facilities, which are causing extreme hardship to civilians this winter. Türk said his team on the ground is continuing to document violations affecting both civilians and combatants, including arbitrary detention and forced disappearance, torture, and conflict-related sexual violence. Ukraine's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Yevhenia Filipenko, has called for international support for establishment of a special tribunal. She said Russian political and military leadership must be held to account for the crime of aggression against Ukraine. In presenting the report, Türk expressed his personal horror at the suffering inflicted upon millions of people in Ukraine. Türk, who ended a four-day visit to Ukraine a week ago, spoke about the deaths, the anguish of lives uprooted and of families ripped apart. Since Russia attacked Ukraine February 24th, he said nearly 8 million people have fled the country and 6.5 million have been internally displaced. He said more than 18 million people, almost half the population, need humanitarian aid.
An estimated 1.5 million children are at risk of depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other mental conditions. And I'm mentioning this in particular because it shows the horrible impact that the war has in particular on children.
U.S. Ambassador to the UN Human Rights Council, Michelle Taylor, said the United States is outraged by the atrocities committed in the war against Ukraine. She called on Russia to end the war and said Washington stands in solidarity with the people of Ukraine. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, the president of South Africa is fighting for his political future. It's a dramatic reversal of fortunes for an anti-apartheid icon once admired for tackling the problems of Africa's most developed economy. Cyril Ramaphosa says he's innocent of charges that he hid at least $58,000 in a sofa at his game ranch and did not tell police when it was stolen, apparently to avoid questions over how he got the U.S. dollars. South Africa's ruling party, the African National Congress, is expected to vote during a conference starting Friday on whether the 70-year-old Ramaphosa should step down. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Türk warns people's rights and freedoms in Nicaragua have been whittled away by the increasingly authoritarian government of President Daniel Ortega. The High Commissioner presented an update Thursday on the situation to the UN Human Rights Council. Again, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
High Commissioner Türk criticized Nicaragua's human rights record, saying the climate of oppression has intensified since the country's human rights situation last came under review by the Council. Türk said dozens of people critical of the government had been arbitrarily detained for expressing their views since September. He described their conditions of detention as precarious.
Those detained in El Chipote continue to suffer inhuman conditions with limited access to medical care, to balanced diets, and to regular family contact. Their mental health deteriorating with every passing day. With humiliating and degrading treatment of family members visiting prisoners, such as elderly women subjected to strip searching.
Turk said more than 3,000 national and international non-government organizations have been shut down, depriving countless people of access to services or assistance. He said the media have been muzzled, human rights defenders, journalists, and clergy arrested, harassed, and intimidated. Turk called November's municipal elections a sham, noting the wave of arrests and dismissals of political opponents in the months leading up to the elections. He said the effects of this crisis continue to ripple beyond Nicaragua's borders.
Between January and October 2022, Costa Rica received 70,000 new asylum applications from Nicaraguans. Over 147,000 Nicaraguans ended up at the borders of the United States of America. And the country has continued to isolate itself from the international community.
In a rebuttal Thursday, Nicaragua's Attorney General Wendy Carolina Morales Urbina rejected the report as biased and manipulative. She told the council to stop meddling in her country's affairs. Instead of denigrating Nicaragua's government and institutions, she said the council must act toward Nicaragua with respect, justice, and equality. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. And Jordan has launched a $300 million six-phase project ahead of Christmas celebrations to develop the officially recognized site of Jesus Christ's baptism located on the east bank of the Jordan River. Jordan also pledges to maintain the area's spiritual and physical integrity. For VOA, Dale Gavlak reports from Amman.
Jordan offers a variety of tourism possibilities, adventure, medical, and religious, with many notable Christian and biblical sites. But Jordanian Catholic priest Father Rifat Badr says the most important is the site of Jesus Christ's baptism. Badr, who directs the Catholic Center for Studies and Media in Amman, notes that three Catholic popes, St. John Paul II, Pope Benedict XVI, and Pope Francis, all visited the holy site, recognizing its importance. In 2015, it was recognized as a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Since 2000 years, we had the establishment of the churches. Now is the time to fulfill the needs of the tourists or the pilgrims to come to this site. Until now, we don't have a lot of services.
Ancient Roman and Byzantine churches, a monastery, and baptism pools on the site were destroyed by earthquakes and flooding throughout the centuries commemorating Jesus' baptism by John the Baptist. Today, visitors can spend only a couple of hours there due to a lack of accommodation and services. Now, Samir Murad, a former Jordanian labor minister, has been tasked with overseeing a project to develop a 160-hectare area for the nonprofit Foundation for Development of Lands adjacent to the baptism site. It will be designed to provide an authentic educational and spiritual experience while allowing visitors to luxuriate in Bedouin tents. The initiative will also supply farm-to-food restaurants for visitors and pilgrims who wish to spend quality time at the nearby baptism site.
This site is a recent discovery. We're sharing it with the world now. It is now clearly documented and evidenced and acknowledged that this is the true baptism site of Jesus Christ. The Hashemite family who rule Jordan are traditional custodians of the holy sites in the region. They have taken it upon themselves to protect the site and preserve it exactly as it is.
A botanical garden of biblical plants and herbs, as well as a bird sanctuary, museum, and small amphitheater are envisioned in the project. Wi-Fi and global communications infrastructure are planned below ground to maintain the integrity of the wilderness setting. Murad, along with a board of trustees, volunteered their time to make sure access to the valuable historic treasure is enhanced. They say they are actively seeking funding from government entities, religious foundations, and others to make the holy site a place for many more to enjoy. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, a former Minneapolis police officer who assisted in the restraint that led to the death of George Floyd, was just sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Much is known about George Floyd's death, but little about his life. On this edition of the program, we present an encore conversation with Tolu Olorunipa, co-author of the acclaimed book, His Name is George Floyd. That's Press Conference USA, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis.
Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including President Joe Biden hosts the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington, where African leaders and those in the private sector and diaspora face additional challenges brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic and the war in Ukraine. This and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. On this last U.S. politics edition of Encounter, we take stock of a divided Congress, the result of the November midterm elections, and what can the current Democratic Congress achieve in its waning days of 2022? John Fortier and Jim Kessler weigh in on the lame duck session and discuss challenges facing the razor-thin Republican majority in 2023. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu in Washington. Wishing you a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is seeking justice and accountability for Russia's atrocities in Ukraine. 9 months into Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Russian troops killed or wounded thousands of civilians, forced at least 13 million Ukrainian citizens to flee their homes, bombed infrastructure necessary to maintain basic water and electricity, struck hospitals, schools, and apartment buildings, and pounded historic cities to rubble. The aggression against Ukraine has been accompanied by systemic war crimes committed in every region where Russia's forces have been deployed, said Dr. Beth Van Schaak, U.S. Ambassador at Large for Global Criminal Justice at the State Department. We're seeing custodial abuses of civilians and POWs, and also efforts to cover up these crimes. We have reports of citizens being killed execution style with their hands bound. We have bodies that show signs of torture. We have horrific accounts of gender-based violence, including sexual violence against women and children, said Ambassador Van Schaak. Ukraine's Office of the Prosecutor General has already identified thousands of incidents that may constitute war crimes. The Russian government has also subjected thousands of Ukrainian citizens to a vast transnational infrastructure of filtration operations. There are compelling reports describing physical and psychological abuse, including summary executions as part of these operations, and the forcible transfer and deportation of Ukrainian civilians, including thousands of Ukraine's children who have been abducted and forced to join Russian families through adoption. These reports depict a disturbing pattern of abuse everywhere Russia's forces are engaged. These abuses are also consistent with what was reported from the Kremlin's previous military engagements in Chechnya, Syria, and Georgia. The United States is supporting a number of international efforts to investigate atrocities in Ukraine. This includes ongoing investigations by the International Criminal Court, as Ukraine has consented to its jurisdiction. There's a UN Commission of Inquiry also focused on Ukraine, as well as the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission. And the Europeans have formed a joint investigative team through the Eurojust Network, which recently drafted and amended its regulations to enable it to serve as an evidence repository for the Commission of International Crimes. The United States is also providing robust technical support to Ukraine's Office of the Prosecutor General efforts to assist their ongoing documentation and investigation of Russia's atrocities in Ukraine. These efforts are complementary and critical. The world is united around the imperative of ensuring accountability for Russia's atrocities in Ukraine.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.